Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Daniel Fieldsend, who worked for the academies of Everton and Liverpool FC before becoming an author of various football books. He's the co-author of This Is Our Game, which looks at the murals, the billboards, the graffiti, the colours on the bars and pubs. The book invites you to celebrate the greatest football cities from Barcelona to Buenos Aires, as told by the fans living in them. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. So it must have been quite controversial, I guess, to work for both Everton and Liverpool.
Well, yeah, one was quite fleeting. It was actually because I was working for Everton and a Liverpool fan that Liverpool said, no, what are you doing? You need to come work for us. So that was an easy decision.
Oh, fair enough. So how did you get into writing about football?
I always wrote alongside the coaching and the football career anonymously, but the opportunity came to kind of merge those two worlds together. So I got to visit all the other top clubs across Europe, Juventus, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, and write about what they did that made them unique. That was back in 2014, and I was able to publish that. And since then, I just decided writing was the thing, you know, that I loved the most.
Yeah, so how did this book come about?
This was actually my, the co-writer Joel was my university lecturer in 2010, and he came to me with this idea that he's been sitting on for a long time about the most passionate football cities, places when you arrive at them, you just know there's a feeling, there's an atmosphere that they kind of live and breathe the game. So Joel came to me and said, you know, we should collaborate on this, and it was an easy sell, you know, and what we've done to make the book unique is we've got contributors from each of them cities. So it's not been me writing it, so to speak, or Joel, we've edited it. But we've managed to get people from all different walks of life, different genders, ethnicities, all to collaborate together. So it's got a really universal kind of viewpoint.
Yeah. And was it obvious which cities you were going to choose? I suppose some of them would have been, but there's some slightly more, dare I say, obscure cities in the book.
There are some obscure ones, but they also do tell an interesting story about the passion for football worldwide. So one of the more obscure ones would probably be Jakarta, but Jakarta's a sinking city. You know, within 15 years, they're talking about evacuating Jakarta, but yet year upon year, the people here are still obsessed with football fandom. You know, and it kind of displays how humans view the world. So, yeah, there are some obscure ones, and the ones that spoke for themselves, the likes of Rio de Janeiro, Buenos Aires, you know, you had to include those cities, Naples as well. But we wanted to include a truly global coalescence of cities. So we could have stopped the book at, I don't know, 15 chapters, but we thought it's best to have a fully global viewpoint. So we've got Los Angeles in there, Jakarta, Mexico City. And I think they do actually enhance the book and make it all the more interesting to read.
Yeah, for sure. And how did you find all the people to contribute?
That was fun. That was like being in the transfer market. you know, it's a funny one. So I started mostly myself recruiting people for the book before Google had this kind of like AI search. So I was really going through pieces of text and deep diving to find the best writers. And then for the last kind of month or so of the book, you only have to type in on Google like best football writers and it would bring them up anyway. But no, we've got a really interesting team of people, academics, writers, all different professions really that, as I say, give us different perspectives.
And were they all able to write in English, or did you have to get some translated?
No, they didn't. And I said to them, you know, with my kind of use of Google Translate, write it in your own native tongue. Write it as you want it, you know, to be done. And then we paid translators to kind of bring text across from Arabic, etc. So it's as first-hand as possibly can be, because I didn't want them to kind of write it in English and lose so much in translation. But yeah, that was a bit of an obstacle that we managed to work our way around.
Yeah, and some of the cities have one big football team, whereas other cities have multiple teams. So obviously Liverpool is in there, and presumably you're talking about Everton and Liverpool.
Yeah, and there's, for example, that's similar to Rome and Milan, where there's just two teams. But then there's other cities like Mexico City, which has three, Buenos Aires, which has 11. So,
11?
Yeah, as many as. So it's quite interesting to kind of view where football fandom originates. Is it a locality? Is it a class thing? And it varies city upon city. Some of them are supported on ethnic and religious grounds. And as I say, some are supported on class. Like in Mexico City, depending on who you say that you support, people can judge you as a person on where you stand and what your views and values are. It's quite fascinating how that begins. But then the cities like Belgrade and Liverpool, for example, where there is no kind of geographical basis for supporting them teams, but yet in Belgrade, people still fight and kill each other for what they deceive or what they perceive as the honour of their football team. So, yeah, it's really fascinating, and it all comes out in the book. Because football, I think, and most people who follow the game kind of think, it's a way of explaining the world, and it's almost like an easy way to get to grips with a knowledge of a place. So, yeah, the book does that fantastically well.
Yeah. And do you think a lot of the time it's a generational thing? So taking Liverpool as an example, you know, if you grow up in an Everton household, you're likely to stick to being an Everton supporter. Is that generally how it would work?
In Liverpool, it can be, you know, there's still some autonomy. You can pick your own team and have, you know, a dad who's an Everton fan, but a son who's a Liverpool fan. And that's still the same today and always kind of has been, but a lot of them are passed through from family to family, yeah. I think Rome is a prime example of that. It's territorial, but, you know, there's talk in the chapter of fathers who won't talk to sons at all, total abandonment if they don't support the same team. Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow, that is mad, isn't it? So tell us a bit about, you've got Istanbul in there. What can you tell us about Istanbul?
Well, Istanbul's a really fascinating one. I was speaking to a friend about Istanbul yesterday, and he's been over quite a lot. And he said, of all the places he's been, and he travels for work, he works in aviation, he says Istanbul is the most passionate football city that he's ever been to. And Istanbul, you've got the kind of geographical divide. You've got Fenerbahce in Asia, Besiktas, like the working class team, and Galatasaray, which were historically, it was Galata Palace. It was kind of like the affluent club. I don't know if that still kind of exists today. I think it's a case that you can support any of them. But yeah, Istanbul for him, and it shines through in the chapter, is the most passionate football city in the world.
Isn't that fascinating? I bet a lot of people wouldn't have thought that. That's not a well-known thing, is it?
No, it's not. A lot of these cities have kind of similar origins. It's the English who introduced football, and locals looked on with fascination and then started to get to grips and, you know, created their own teams. So they all have kind of English origins, and Istanbul's the same. There's only maybe two, like LA and Mexico City, which came later in the 1950s, but yeah, the origins are all quite similar, and a lot of the chapters take nods towards the English expats from the early 1800s, and Istanbul's one of those as well.
Because Los Angeles must be an interesting one, because, I mean, unless things have changed, they don't even call it football, do they? It's soccer over there.
I know, and we had to release the book as... Yeah, as inside the world's greatest soccer cities for the US market.
Really?
Yeah, we had to change. So on all of them, it says from Barcelona to Buenos Aires, but over there it's Liverpool to LA. but yeah, no, so the chapters are actually really interesting one, and it talks about the different communities in LA. And even though they've got two big teams, LA Galaxy and LAFC, the biggest team is still Chivas of Mexico because of the kind of Mexican community there. and the Mexican League's the most backed one. So even though, you know, they've got teams that do really well, that have had Beckham and Ibrahimovic, it's the Mexican community that still thrives. So they created an offshoot back in the day in LA called Kivas USA for the Mexican fans. No one picked up on it. They had like 1,000 fans. Everyone still backed the long-standing teams from back home. Yeah, Mexico, sorry, LA, it's a really fascinating one.
Yeah. What about Sydney? I don't know much about Australian football. Again, they've got Aussie rules and various different similar-ish games.
Yeah, and the Sydney chapter is fascinating in the sense that it talks about how people assimilate and the kind of immigration and migration in Sydney. And it shines a light on kind of a lack of integration. It talks about the communities who follow football and how, as a response, Aussie rules was kind of elevated. So there was football that ran alongside other sports in Sydney as a way of ostracising people. Whereas in every other chapter, it's overwhelmingly welcomed, you know. And as you said, Istanbul before, it's almost like local consciousness. It's the most major thing. Whereas in cities like Sydney, it wasn't. I mean, it is now. But yeah, that's another interesting one. And I view them as little macrocosms of how to view human behaviour and human society and what's in and what's out, you know, and the semantics of it. So, as I say, yeah, you know, if you're a football fan, then, oh, you must have had some family migration history, and that's how people would view each other over there. So, yeah, it shines through in the chapter, but the Sydney one's interesting as well.
Yeah. I have to ask you about Barcelona, because obviously we're in Spain and Camp Nou being the largest stadium in Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, I love the Barcelona chapter. That's really big on psychogeography, so how a place's literal geographical shape kind of influences the way people think. So in Barcelona, you've got the mountains flanked behind, and it, you know, it allowed for Catalan identity to thrive, and how Barcelona FC was a conduit to, you know, showcase Catalan identity. And in other chapters, we talk about that kind of psychogeography as well, like Marseille, Liverpool, Glasgow, these were all cities that were, and Naples, made rich once upon a time, similar to Barcelona, but then the money dried up and these places kind of plunged into poverty, and football was the only means that people had to give themselves some pride and purpose and identity. And if it wasn't for the literal geography, the geographical shape of these places, then they wouldn't have experienced these things, these kind of traumatic events. So the Barcelona chapter is, again, a truly interesting way of viewing how people create and cultivate identity. And it's an interesting case in point, because Espanyol don't have the same identity as Barcelona, or FC Barcelona. And because FC Barcelona have these, you know, imposed limitations upon Catalanism, they were able to reach incredible heights due to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big thing in Spain, that the amount of money that goes into Barcelona and obviously Real Madrid as well, compared to all the other teams, that a lot of the other teams in certainly either in the same league or the other leagues feel a bit hard done by, because it makes a difference with TV rights and things like that.
Yeah, but they need each other. It's that kind of syntax and semantic identity. If you took Real Madrid out of the league and you only had Barcelona, then Barcelona wouldn't have nothing to proclaim themselves against. Mm. They need to have the team from the capital there. And, you know, because Real Madrid is the highest capital city in Europe, it has this kind of grandiose expectation and this kind of lofty perception of itself. They need each other to sustain. And, I mean, it's a whole massive case in point as well, but you could argue that the Spanish league also needs them as well, despite all the investment that goes into them.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I know it's not featured in the book, but I'm loving the programme Welcome to Wrexham. And one of the biggest things that comes across in that is the community, and how, you know, there were people who aren't into football that would just flippantly say, oh, it's just a game, what's the big deal? But when you watch something like Welcome to Wrexham, you can see that it's so much more than just a game of football.
Yeah, it is. And that's something that came up in the Istanbul chapter. It comes up in the Rome chapter, Marseille as well, that because football existed, it gave migrants and people who were new to the city a means of latching onto something that gave them an identity. And like the Roma chapters is a really fascinating one. So you've got Lazio, who are quite exclusive. They've got a fascist background. And Roma, which adopts all the emblems of the city and the colours and the name of the city, welcome people. So they call Roma like the mixed race club and Lazio the nationalist club. Football is community at the end of the day. It's the game for the people. And we're kind of at a juncture in football nowadays. Who does the game actually belong to? You know, there's so many transitory factors. There's fans who come and go, owners who come and go, players, etc. But it's these long-standing, traditional, deep-rooted communities who view football clubs as an extension of their own family and ideals that keep football grounded. And all of the chapters in this book have them people who are almost digging their heels in and keeping that communal feel of football. So I'm glad that you highlighted that. Yeah, and Wrexham's an interesting example, because it's essentially the club of the entire north of Wales nowadays.
Yeah.
Similar to how Naples is the club of the entire South Italy. You know, where the club is based, it has this almost huge network that it can envelope people with.
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, it's lovely when it's a such a big part of the community, but it's a real shame, to say the least, when it turns to violence, as we've seen recently in Paris with the PSG win, but yet violence in the city afterwards. It's such a shame.
I know, and violence comes into the book throughout. Oftentimes when you've got these communities that feel unrepresented or they're living in poverty, etc., and they get together en masse, then football is the way that they can utilise that kind of mass gathering to display violence and dissatisfaction. And I think that's something that comes up in every single chapter. There are themes of tension, struggle, violence, oppression. Oftentimes they're at different points in history. So the Belgrade chapter, it was throughout the 1990s. You could go further back in time. Marseille was in the 1980s where this kind of tension existed. Unfortunately for today, it's in Paris. And oftentimes it's not just football that is the means for the violence, but there's other things as well that goes hand in hand.
Yeah. And with all the cities that you've been to and all the stadiums that you've been to, any highlights that stand out for you, moments that you'll never forget?
I loved, so me and Joel, the co-writer, we went to Naples when they won their third league title 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm a Liverpool fan. I've seen Liverpool win things. There's been trophy parades. But seeing that display and that level of fandom in Naples, it kind of made me a little bit envious and a bit sad that we'd never be able to replicate that. It was truly just on another level. You'd have like entire blocks of flats where all the residents had chipped in money to have this huge banner made that just draped down the entire block of flats. Everywhere you looked, there was Napoli blue. You know, they even have a kind of small cafe there where the owner of the cafe was behind Maradona on a flight back in the 1990s, and he cut a lock of Maradona's hair, and it's enshrined and it rotates. And you just look and think, like, oh my God, like we love football in Liverpool, but this is just on another level entirely.
Yeah.
So I'll always kind of hold Naples up for me as that kind of paragon to aspire towards.
Amazing. Well, a moment for me, not as a fan of either team, but I lived in Newcastle for a short time in the late 90s. And I remember when Newcastle were playing Man United in, I think it was the FA Cup final in like 98. And I worked in a shop during the day, and that we were told that the shop was closing early because of the football. And I thought that was quite weird. You know, all the shops shut early because everybody wanted to watch the football. And then the city went absolutely dead, and then suddenly everybody came out and everyone's wearing the black and white stripes, including babies in prams, people in wheelchairs. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It was unbelievable. So that was quite a moment for me, seeing that.
I think that, so they're quite similar, aren't they? Newcastle and Naples, and that they're both one club cities where it's for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it was the same for me in Naples where the dogs were dressed up in Napoli kits.
Yes. But then I have to say, going back to the violence thing, I saw one of the most frightening fights ever when three guys clearly looking for a fight turned up in the middle of the city wearing Sunderland kits. And they did get a fight.
Yeah, well, if you go looking for it, sometimes you will receive it.
Yes, quite. Well, a fascinating book. If people want to get a copy, it's called This Is Our Game. It's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Daniel Fieldsend, who we've been chatting with today. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.